Blog Talk Radio.
Saturday.
Saturday.
Watching you as you're dreaming, the dreams I thought I knew. Your smile shows the reason I watched it all come true. Your touch is cold and distant,
talented, Shout Even Shy, and she was singing some lyrics by none other than the ridiculously talented Jay Hatter. Hello, Mr. Hatter, how are you?
Just fine, AP, thank you. Glad to be here.
Excellent, excellent. And as always, we have Deb sitting somewhere in the background, and so she will, I'm sure, pop her head up at some point and say hello. But meantime, we have a couple of callers, Hatter. We have a couple of callers. And so you can call into the show. Can call into the show. It's 1-646-668-2837 if you want to call in. Exactly the same as I believe maybe Stephen has done here. Hello, Stephen. How are you?
Hello.
It's great to have you on board, Steve. Thank you. And I think we might have a visitor in Miss Brandy. Hello, Brandy. How are you?
Hey,
how are you, Brandy?
And find it.
Excellent, excellent. Now, I should say, Stephen, that this, of course, is a Deborah Lee production for a team of voices, and if you want to find us, we're on allpoetry.com. Come and say hello at a team of voices, and Deb will be at the door and she will say something like, hello, which is what she's doing right now. Hi, Deb. How are you?
I'm okay. How are you?
No, I'm very, very well. Good to have you with us. So we are doing the theme for this week. I want to sort of work, yeah, because we sort of go inside out a theme and around a theme and sometimes talk about a theme and sometimes talk about things completely differently, Ada. I mean, we didn't have a theme of the boat that was stuck in the Suez Canal, but we spent about an hour on it, or a bit more,
hey,
on one show.
I think
so, you know, we just talk about what we want to talk about, really.
I think we should have submitted our bill within our think tank time, and when they got it free, it was less than 24 hours, so somebody was listening to us.
Well, that's true. That's true. The by the way, that ship is still stuck in Egypt. If you were a crew member and you were unfortunate enough to be on that great big balumping ship with that great big balumping lot of containers, you could still be on that ship in years, Hatter.
You think that,
so,
are they stranded? Is that crew stranded on that vessel?
The crew is stranded on that vessel, Hatter, yes.
Oh, wow, I did not know that.
So, yeah. No, the ship's been impounded and the crew are stuck.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Long enough to get stuck getting on each other's nerves, man. Now they're probably scared to death. So that's actually 26 crew. What's the shore? Is that, that's not Jordan, is it? That, what's the two border?
No, it's Egypt.
Countries right there.
Egypt.
It's Egypt.
No, they're with Egypt. Yep, Egypt are basically saying this vessel's ours. And the containers, or 20,000 containers, are ours, and the crew's staying on there until we actually go and negotiate a settlement for all the money that it's cost us.
Isn't it billions of dollars?
Huh.
It at the minute, Deb, apparently they're looking for US $916 million, but that's before the salvage cost.
What do we got to do with anything?
Yeah.
I thought it was a Norwegian boat. What do we got to do with it?
No. It's an Asian boat of some description, Hatter. It's an Asian boat, and my understanding is that the poor buggers who are on the vessel, basically, you know, moving it backwards and forwards, are Indian sailors. So. Indian sailors are the ones
Indian
stuck.
Indian sailors. Pakistani
boat
built in Norway. Okay.
No. It's a Panamanian flagged ship, yeah. And it's owned by a Japanese... Yeah, it's a Panamanian flagship. It's owned by a Japanese firm, and it's operated by a Taiwanese shipper. There you go.
Fleet. There's like three or four of them. Shoot.
These guys have got 120 boats, the guys in Taiwan that own this firm. But the vessel itself is owned by a Japanese firm.
It was Taiwan.
Like the United Nations of Shipping. Yeah.
Not to mention all the cargo that was on all the ships that were stuck there when nobody could get past.
Yeah.
What was the name of the ship?
Have a name? I think it was the Ever Given.
Evergreen is the name of the firm,
and the ship is the Ever Given. So, there you go. And it's not a small ship. You know, if you stuck it up on its bow,
ridiculous.
It would be the height of the Empire State Building. Sorry, Hannah?
In the middle of the desert, to see those things floating through that canal is just ridiculous looking.
Yes.
They're so flipping. They're so flipping enormous, and there's nothing. It's flat, so there's nothing.
Yes.
It's like a bobbing out of the water. Incredible.
Oh yeah, yeah. No, it's crazy. I agree with you. It's madness. But you know, it happens in a few places around the world that you have this. Boats that are big, going through sort of narrow spaces, if you will. So it's not just in the Suez Canal, but that's where a lot of it is, you know. So anyway, I should say, Stephen, you I think might be on a time frame here, so I'm just thinking that we should probably see if
yeah,
that's the
I'm
case. So you
tired
on a
as well.
Oh. Ah, no, but Brandy as well. So we've got to get everybody sort of on board before everybody falls asleep. So Stephen, have you got a piece that you want to share with us?
Yes, I do, actually. It's a pre-write, but Tumbleweeds...
That's okay.
...brought this...
That's okay, but it's on topic, so that is impressive. So let me go to the board and grab that piece. And then, Brandy, so we're talking Tumbleweeds. Brandy, Tumbleweeds,
mm-hmm.
It's the theme.
I know.
Mm. Okay, you put it up, Stephen. You beat me. So, and I've got a little vessel there that's going through canals in, I think it might be Norway, but anyway, same sort of thing. Stephen, the microphone's yours.
All right. As I said, tumbleweeds kind of make me think in this direction, so I will apologize for the somber message of the poem, but it's called So Cold I Can See My Sigh. The little hours of the morning always bring the same confusing discomfort. Not knowing where I am, a terrifying feeling. Dreaming of my warm and comfortable bed, I awaken to blackest pitch, fumbling in my sweatpants pocket, pulling out my cellular phone. It's a cheap model that has no contract. I flip it open, revealing the gray cloth ceiling, which is drooping in many areas. Looking to my right, I see my wife in a freezing slumber. In the back seat are two children huddled together with Spike, our mixed breed dog. In the distance, I hear a tractor trailer revving its diesel engine. Then I close my phone, and then my watering eyes remembering the lost job, the lost home. And now we face Christmas in a car, and the only lights we'll see are from the superstore parking lot. End poem.
You're right. It's a dark piece, Stephen, but it's a piece that many people in North America face every night. Their car is all they have, and they sleep in that car because it's the warmest place that they can sleep, and the safest place that they can sleep. And it's a regular thing, and it happens all the time, unfortunately. But and it was a very well-written poem. Hatter, did you want to say some words about Stephen's piece?
I was playing catch-up, and I just got here, so let me read it.
No. No, you've got it. Well, in that case, I'll go to Deb first. Hello, Deb. What do you think of Stephen's piece?
Well, if it wasn't heartbreaking enough all the way through, by the time you sit there and think about the kids and Christmas and the only light being from a store where it's probably loaded with Christmas decorations and laughter and stuff like that, the images are heartbreaking. Far, far too many. Hell of a share.
Yeah, I agree. Brandy, what did you think of Stephen's piece?
Oh, man, it's so poignantly sad. But that's how society can be so cruel to the best of people. But it's just not, you know, we as society tend to turn our backs and be blindfolded to what's really going on.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's just not, you know, America. It's everywhere.
No, I completely agree. It is. It's not an American-centric thing. It happens in very many countries around the world, ours included. So it's certainly not just an American thing. So Hatter, did you have a chance to read the piece while we've been talking?
Yeah. It's a reality check, you know. It could happen to you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Everybody lives on everybody seems to be living on the edge, you know.
Yeah.
I guess you have to ride that, but yeah, it's reality. It's not overboard. It's nothing but a life check. Yeah, got your grace.
Yeah, it's truthful. It's a truthful poem, and it doesn't pull any punches, but it doesn't go and sensationalize it. It just sort of says this is what it is, and this is how it is.
Yep.
So, Stephen, thank you for sharing. Is this? I'm assuming this is one of these nights where you need to probably bundle off to get some sleep. Is that right?
Yes, unfortunately it is.
Okay. Righto. Well, thank you for joining us, and thank you for sharing. It's much appreciated. And did you want to give a plug to any of your shows upcoming before you disappear?
Oh, yeah, sure. Our next show over at Poetic Slice of Life is Monday night at 11:30 p.m. Eastern. It's the Mortuary of Shadows, and we're doing another true crime episode, and we're going to feature the man who inspired wonderful movies like Texas Chainsaw Massacre, Silence of the Lambs, and Psycho. We're bringing in Ed Gein.
Certainly dark. So, no, well done, and thank you again for joining us, and all the best with the show.
Thank you, AP. Have a good one.
Pleasure.
Bye.
Now, good night.
Right.
Good night.
And Brandy, did you have anything in your great lexicon of writing that had anything to do with the tumbleweed?
Here's the thing. My mom passed away. So I took a month away from AP, and it's been a month now since her passing.
Yeah. Oh, goodness me. That's
now,
awful,
I'm dealing
Brandy.
With heart issues, I'm having to deal with private health, deal with health issues now. But I will be back next month.
That's just hard work, Brandy. That's hard work.
Yeah,
and
so I have to get things slow and easy. But
Did you? Well, put it up on the board then, and read it.
It's up on the board if y'all caught it.
Easy. Perfect. Well, we're in your hands, Brandy.
It's called. I saw the tumbleweed pitch, but I thought it was unique, and I called it Catacombs of Subliminal Messenger Terminals. And it goes like this. Terminated cauterized simulations. Etched stitch fixed skeletons later. Perhaps. Alabaster China dolls were spoken in tongues. Legitimacy letterized. Verb slit wrists drawn telemarketers. Stitch fixed etched dollies hunkering down verse wrist-slitted porcelain proclamations now expired in poem.
Interesting and very different for you too, Andy. It's just a series of sort of etched sort of comments and spaces, which is again very different for you. So, it was, as I said, quite intriguing. I'm going to go to Deb. Deb, what did you think of Brandy's piece?
Well, I think that the metaphors here are crazy, outrageous, good, like Alabaster China dolls. That one was awesome. But at the very beginning, terminated, cauterized simulations, etched stick sticks, skeletons later. I can't even say it. Stitch fish. See, it's like a tongue twister. But I thought that it was extremely original, like wrist-drawn telemarketers. I'm not even going to try to say that again. Etched dollies, hunkering down, burst, wrist slitted porcelain. I mean, vivid, and they are, they do, they're sharp, and they can prick the skin. So the slitted porcelain wrists is vicious. Brevity, Brandy, damn.
Thank you.
And thank you, Deb. And Hannah, did you want to say a few words?
Yeah, that the line Deb just pointed out, and I was going to say it for you. It's like, remember the Riddler, Frank Gorshin, the way he would talk when you get intense. They go stitch fixed as dollies hunkering down verse wrist slithered porcelain didn't even know it was there.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely, Ada. No, thank you. And Brandy, do you you sound like you have to disappear because you're going to fall asleep otherwise? But thank you for sharing.
The thing is, I can't get it overly excited. Otherwise,
yes.
My heart will skip beats, and it's
painful.
No,
we can't have that.
When it happens.
Yeah, no,
we can try to
get
I have to really
dull
down. I'm trying to stay in tune long enough to hear Deb's poem. And also,
yes.
I remember I read it earlier, and I was like, how did she come up with these pictures?
Well, that's the case. We better put Deb's poem up
on
the board then. So why don't we grab the collaboration, Deb, that you very always artistically put together? And put that up on the board while Brandy is with us. So,
okay, let's do that.
You can have a hear.
Yeah, and this is number 44.
44, how's that?
And I'm going to blame Hatter because he put the name of a circus family in it. And it triggered me to have a memory that I needed to go look up. And when I did, I was, struck by the sadness of it. So I actually stole one of your lines and put my own in, Hatter. So anyway, this is called Tales of the Dark Cloud That Hovered Over the Circus Camp. And here we go. Holiday light shows the flying Wallendas as the trolls tell stories into nights. In St. Louis, on cable, screaming purple haze, a tightrope walking amid the lights. Birdhouses and clocks and umbrellas that lock are all stacked in lore and advice, but extraction ladders cannot save the souls of the troll watchers or even the mice. The villagers waited with clown suits on as their children's eyes opened in fear. Silence crept up to the foot of the fire from the lights and galaxies near. With no net and thinking they're fine in the cold, and those eyes and watching vans, a sister and a son crashed to the ground out of clouds and planes as I scanned. And Paul, ooh.
Isn't that intriguing?
Yeah.
There you go.
Isn't
that intriguing?
I put the link for information on them because it was actually a sister-in-law and a son-in-law, but they were plagued by tragedy and death, and they really did, it's a true story, they really did do their act without a net, so with no safety net,
Rio de Janeiro. Rio de Janeiro.
So this one's potent.
Isn't that interesting?
Oh.
And I'm fascinated that this could actually lead to something in terms of a true story that, I had no idea about. Now, Brandy, you must have seen this one. What did you think?
Oh, wow. To pull out the parts with... based on the actual story. Hey, that is kudos in my book. Wow, you pulled out some great imagery. And now I see the tightrope. Now I notice the tightrope at
the
top of the picture with the light bulb.
Yeah.
And all this stuff. I'm like, whoa, you know, you talking about me. I may do metaphors, woman. You can do imagery all day long.
Yeah, but Brenda, you have now get a load of this, though. The thing is, all I did was give it a title, add the words with no net, and I put a sister and a son crashed to the ground. Every other line that you see here was either written by AP or Hatter without speaking to each other and just by looking at the same photo. They're not allowed to talk. They just send me some lines. So this is out of their brains without speaking and just a teeny bit of me thrown in there to thread it together. It's a blind collaboration.
This is a Stitch Fix right here in itself. You know, this is Stitch Fix poetry right here. Yes. Kudos.
And they blow
Kudos.
Me away with their lines every week because I can always find a way to thread them into a story. Never quite to the point of this where it ends up telling you about a tragic story for a circus family. But, yeah, it's like uncanny, in tune, almost psychic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, wow.
Interesting. It was really interesting because I first looked at it and I thought, I'm not sure how I'm going to be able to work this. And then the more I looked at it, the more stuff sort of jumped out at me, but particularly those little characters going across the set of lights there.
I thought you'd caught that too. Yeah. Very good.
And they both gave me their lines at the very last second this week. So it's even more amazing that it fell on the page the way it did.
Yes.
And
I just can't leave early without listening to your collaborations. You know, I've been away for a month. And you know, what's going on with me and what happened with my family dynamics? Yeah, I've been, like, counting the days when, you know, when I read Dale's poems, collaborations. And stuff. But, yes. This is a treat for me from y'all. So I can thank y'all.
It came together remarkably well, Hatter, and that it tells the story of a real show business family is quite remarkable, really, that you could actually throw the words together and get that result. So it's, I'm quite surprised by this one. I didn't see it going this way, Deb, which is kind of nice. I like it when I'm surprised.
Me too.
Did you mention ladders at all?
I think, let me see here. They are, you did with the ladders.
I was wondering if AP had.
No, that's the thing. Instead of doubling up, you guys just know exactly where to spread it out. Because, I mean, to be honest, when we first did this, once or twice, there were so many sort of duplicates that it was a little bit harder. And now it's just practically perfect.
I think our eyes get drawn to different things, Hatter. And often for me, it's the things on the outer. And often for you, it's the things that are sort of in the middle and make it happen.
What lines did you write about the center? The center with those guys hanging around that. Did you have any lines?
I It's just the children's eyes open in fear, and the eyes in the watching vans, and the trolls telling the story into the night. So sort of, it was really about the people watching that central piece. Yeah.
Yeah.
I just know I like how y'all just throw the stuff at her and she just sews it up with, you know, whether it be by hand or sewing machine.
Yeah. No, I agree, Brady. I think it was a really, it made it so much more poignant going for the flying Willenders. It was a really clever way to seal this together.
Yes. Well, unfortunately, my heart just skipped a beat, so I really have to go.
No, I understand. Thank you, Brandy, for sticking around.
Yes,
it's been a pleasure.
I got to go take a nitroglycerin right now, so I got to go.
Okay. Thank you again, Brandy.
Deb,
you stay well.
Message you my phone number, so that way we got to message each other's phone number because I lost yours.
Okay.
That way I can let you know what's going on. That way, if I can't make it, then you know why. You can tell everybody else.
All right, B.
All right.
I'm sorry about your mom.
Stay well and all the best.
You too. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye. Okie dokie. It was great to hear Brandy. It's been a while since we've heard Brandy, and we know now why, Deb. So.
Yeah.
I might go right back, Deb, because I, if you recall, there was an image of a seashore, and I actually wrote a poem called Tumbleweeds to it, and it was only a couple of months ago. So I put that up on the board now, and I will go back to that poem and read it, and then I've got a couple of new ones, and I know Hatter's got a new one too, so... This is called Tumbleweeds from a couple of months ago to Deb's image. This quartz glimmers as opal above a shoreline, as saltfish saunter upon currents divine. Their bounty in contrast to shore where a sun burns, those tumbleweeds bore. Tiptoeing through the bushes and weeds, dancing on zephyrs unknown at heeds. Crossing a valley above the sands gains momentum as sun sets in fierce bands. Just moments away, deep below the blue, colours are filtered into an almond hue. Rocks and seabed alive in moss, while crabs skitter as clatter by seaweed floss. And the difference here between vistas water, one all around and on land none quarter, can see by soil and by the trees. This is an arid place, rain's absence, life by degrees. End poem.
Now this is the piece that started my question if Australia had tumbleweeds.
It was Hatter. It was indeed. This was the piece.
I recognize.
Because you said I didn't know that Australia had tumbleweeds, and I said yes, it does. it does have tumbleweeds,
and it does.
They're not big tumbleweeds, like as in tumbleweeds that you see in the sun.
Let me guess.
To be smaller.
Let me guess. And I bet they could kill you.
No, well, that's the thing. No, they're not that dangerous. I mean, I wandered into a whole raft of tumbleweeds when I was going along in the car, and they just collected on the front of the car. Yeah, they didn't sort of kill me. They didn't stop the car. They didn't bang it up. They didn't, you know, go and, you know, lead me to a snake or to a crocodile or a shark or to a crab or to a jellyfish or to a wombat. They just sort of collected on the front of the car, so they were fairly,
simple. You guys think nothing of a 40-pound pine cone.
No,
the tree. That's the tree.
We've got all those things, but tumbleweeds are small. They're little things, and they rumble along. And
but,
as I said, I went to the bush a couple of weeks ago and had a whole heap of tumbleweeds in front of my car. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, very much so. And they just sort of bumble along and The only thing they were doing when I got back to my house was that they were still there and they were clogging up the air intake of the Audi. So I had to remove them because otherwise the Audi would have, you know, started getting hot. But, you know, that's about the only thing they do, really. They're not nearly so big as your standard North American tumbleweed.
We'll call them Aussie tumbles.
Well, absolutely. So, you know, they're just tiny little critters. Tumbies.
Yes, Aussie
tumbies. Call them tumbies. Yeah, tumbies.
Cool.
Call them tumbies. Yeah. So, yeah, they can, like everything, you know, if there's enough of them, they can create a bit of a mess. Yeah, because they can, you know, go and, you know, make it hard to get into places or whatever, you know, but they're not big in and of their own thing, if that makes sense. So they did have a problem in Wangaratta where they had too many of these damn things, and they came in over the grasslands and they sort of, you know, banked up against people's houses. Yeah. So, and it was just a matter of sort of clearing the buggers away. They you know, they're just annoying more than anything else.
It hides complete motorways, highways, freeways, you know.
Yeah. That's right. And so, you know, but you know, they're not, as I said, they're not nearly so big as the American ones, and not really so, you know, impressive. Really, they're just sort of tiny. So, you know, and so, anyways, seems that I can't upload any images today. I'm glad I'm not playing tic tac. They're small, but there's enough of them. They, you know, like anything, that they can bank up around things and create a bit of a mess just in terms of how many there are.
They burn hot too. They can burn hot.
Yes. Well, that's the other thing, of course. You get enough, you know, tumbleweeds or stuff sitting against the house or something like that, and then of course it's much more likely to burn. You know, so it's they're a menace, yeah. So, you know, you don't want sort of too many tumbleweeds. And in the case, as I said, in the case of cars, what they do is they just, in Australia, they just block the air intake areas at the front of the car, and so they just make your car run hotter if you don't get rid of them. So, you know, that's the sort of nature of the little critters. So
they look alive when you're in the desert and you see them rolling across. They're really odd looking.
Yeah,
very eerie.
Well, particularly a bit bigger hatter, and they're solid. You know that you can get a dent in your car, or you can have injured bruising and marking of your car if they're big enough. So, you know, we're lucky in Australia that we only have the small little buggers, you know. So that's at least something.
You know,
I
remember this one because the rhyme pattern here was incredible. I loved the second stanza. And then I got to the bottom and I put, you know, I really love the second stanza. But I didn't remember until I got to my old comment. This is one of those ones where I practically pushed send on the picture and you came back with this masterpiece. And in my author's notes, I made a point of holding on to that show-off title I see. I love the pattern, totally.
Oh, there you go. I think you did. It was just a sort of first off response to the image, which and sometimes you get a sort of affinity with an image. I actually really like this image. It just sort of spoke to me on a whole heap of different levels through the colour and the nature of the ground in the forefront, and then comparing that to what was going on in the clearly in the ocean in the background, and it just you know, you can sometimes get an image like that, and it just, you know, it really just quickly resolved itself as a into a poem. It really did. It was one of those sort of really straightforward sorts of things. So and yeah, the form of it just came out in the first stanza, and so I just followed the first stanza form all the way through. It just sort of was a really easy sort of straightforward write. Yeah,
but sometimes just pushing it down into a five-line stanza rather than a four is a treat for the eye, and then to turn around. And like I said, there's something about that second tiptoeing through the bushes and weeds, dancing on zephyrs unknown that heeds. It's lyrical.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
No, I was going to say, and like you said, the colors here, I wondered where it would take you, and I never expected this tiptoeing journey through, or for you to heavily concentrate on the tumbleweeds. So, you know, it was just unexpected and awesome.
No, thank you. Thank you. And so, but I did have, I was going to put one of my tumbleweed poems up, and then we'll get to your tumbleweed poem, Hatter, and we can talk through that one.
Okay.
I
sounds good.
I did one on just a sort of pure sort of tumbleweed poem, if you will. So this is a new one, Whirl the Dervishes, and it goes a little bit like this. Upon the dry fields get captured in swirls, and their sides wheeled into dervishes' curls. They circle first near and with encouragement towards further steer in a trembling crescent, falling as cruising, shaping to rounded, rough ends losing on air past grounded. Lost to wind's trace, bundled past fields near, swarming at pace without trouble or fear, until stopped by wire into it with others, he dry into a mire, their seeds with brothers. End poem.
Yeah, on this one, those last two stanzas, lost the wind's trace, bundled past fields near, swarming at pace without trouble or fear until stopped by wire, and to a fence with others, here dry in a mire, their seeds with brothers. But the thought of them hitting the wire and catching on fire, they have multiple deadliness that I learned about today. Some of them are in my poem, but that's what struck me there, is if it hit the wire, you know, it could start a brush fire, and the devastation would be horrifying, as you know, as you both know, with the fire so close to each of you over the last year or so.
Yes.
Powerful piece.
Yeah, a little fire bombs.
Thank you. A classic sort of me, A-B-A-B piece. Hatter, what did you think of this one?
I like the way it flowed, just to the lost to wind's trace, bundled past fields near, swarming at pace, but trouble or fear. It's a marching tone to it, but it's a... through self-reflection, self-description from the dry fields.
Yeah.
Now, you kind of look at it like almost if they're alive rather than just a herd. It's got a different,
yeah.
I've never seen one of the big storms, but the new ones.
Yeah, it is a bit of a sort of marching pace to it. It's, but it sort of floats down the page really nicely, this one, and I don't know, I don't know why it does, but it, Hannah, how did you go with your write this week? Because tumbleweeds is a little bit of a
We'll we'll soon find out. You tell me. And I thought I was happy with it when I walked away.
Oh, well, that's a good start. That's a good start. I mean, I think if you're sort of happy with it to begin with, that makes
a difference.
If you
look at the picture,
so I have put
if you look at the picture there.
Had up.
Yeah.
I looked at the picture and I thought, Jesus Christ.
That's cars on the highway.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I'm glad I'm not there.
That thing lit on. If you lit one on fire or something in the right air, dry heat,
yep.
I don't know.
Yeah, I should. Yeah.
Okay, mine's called Waiting for. Yeah. I titled mine Waiting for Will O' the Wisp. Tumbleweeds lined on the sides of the gullies that hot. They hide, waiting. Oh shoot! Can you read this, AP? Please.
Yeah, I'll read this. Yep. All good. Yep.
Thank
Leave
you.
It with me. This is
you.
What below the tumbleweeds, and it goes a bit like this: tumbleweeds lined on the sides of gullies, they hide, waiting for Willow the Wisp. Snapped at the knees to be set free, they gather to blow one last kiss. They roll in by size, stacked in a snowman display. Taken home, they're not alone, for a front yard Christmas display. End poem.
That's what my folks used to do.
That's
go to the desert, get tumbleweeds for next Christmas. They spray paint them, make a
really?
Snowman out of them.
Really?
Yeah.
That's funky. Well, never had tumbleweeds
yeah.
that
yeah.
big that you own at. Really cute.
Yeah, you know, yeah, they paint them white. The last year was funny. My dad made these little wooden reindeer that you could put together in the lawn. And among the tumbleweeds were these little deer. And my dad was
really?
Noticing that somebody had vandalized it and tore everything up. And, you know, and so he put it all back together.
Nah.
And then two nights later, where I was over there early in the morning, and we had a deer out of the orchards come down, full rack. Just tear them little deer up, and then proceeding skewered the snowman and had him in his antlers as he went trotting down the frickin' road. He had the tumbleweed sort of tangled in his antlers because he just went nuts in our front yard.
You don't expect a deer to be a sort of tumbleweed vandal, do you, Adam? You know,
that's he didn't appreciate the art at all. It was just
not
in
at
his
all.
Way.
No. So
must have been Canadian.
You know, well, Play Hatter, and it was you know,
what,
it was. It,
what was odd was
sort of fashion,
what was odd is they were basically no orchards left. That's what was odd about it.
Right.
The building,
right.
The houses were all up. So yeah, this guy was lost.
Very strange. Well, there you go. Deb, what did you think of tumbleweeds and Christmas decorations and stuff?
As usual, the rhyme and flow and cadence is spot on, but I like the wording, waiting for the willow, the wisp, waiting for willow, the wisp, snapped at the knee to be set free, they gather to blow one last kiss. There's a whimsicalness to that that
yeah.
I really like, but the snapped at the knees, that they, in mine, you'll see what they look like before they dry into tumbleweeds, but that's what
okay.
I had. They for some reason they snap right there at the base, and that's why it's a ball of rolling. But for to say snapped off at the knees was quite clever.
Yeah, no, I agree.
Thank you.
No, I agree.
Me too.
I agree. it was fun.
My goodness, look at the car. I'm like, it's like unbelievable.
Yeah, that's the highway.
Yes. Wow. Wow. Yeah, no. Really interesting piece. I liked it.
Now,
it.
Listen,
it's,
guys,
it's,
two things. We only have three poems left. So, one, I want to shout out to our suite because remember, I think it was, 2 weeks ago now that when she broke her face on the dining room table? Okay. Well, my dear sweet's been bleeding since then. Bleeding. And she finally broke down and went to the doctors. And
Yes.
They had to cauterize it because she had all these broken vessels and stuff in, up there. And I'm kind of finding myself extremely relieved that she didn't bleed or drown in her sleep. So send some thoughts out there for our suite.
Wow, absolutely. When she did her accident, I sort of thought to myself, well, that sounds perfectly horrible, but equally, you know, then having to put up with the wounds themselves bleeding for a period of up to weeks afterwards, Deb's just dreadful, really.
Yeah, and she said not trickling, bleeding. So like I said, she could have, I mean, in so many could haves. And,
yes.
You know, a lot of us tend to sometimes just keep putting things off, like, you know, oh, it'll get better. I'm glad she didn't and that she went. And, I mean, I'm sure it's no fun to be cauterized, but it did the trick.
No.
So I'm very thankful.
Excellent. Well, we have to wish Squeak all best. I mean, it's, as you rightly say, Deb, it's no fun to go and get medical treatment, and certainly no fun to go get medical treatment for cauterization. That's no idea of enjoyment. But as you say, I'm glad she did it, and I hope that means that, you know, she's now on top of it, and that it can heal. Yeah, at the end of the day, and give her a bit of space.
For sure. And then the other thing I wanted to bring up is just silly. But I saw, I don't know if it was on a TV show or whatever, but I saw people having breakfast, and on their plate was a pile of baked beans. Now, baked beans are one of my favorite things. But I always thought of it as something that you had at a barbecue or a side dish at dinner. I never knew that it was something people ate for breakfast. And I wondered if either of you eat baked beans for breakfast.
No. I've eaten rice.
Okay, well, that doesn't
that's
kind of bland. It doesn't seem, there's just something, like I said, Frank's and beans or barbecued beans or a side dish with your dinner. But I am surprised how many people have it with their breakfast.
Well, I have
or
to
cultures
say,
or country.
It'd be an English thing for breakfast. If you're having here, you know, like toast and eggs and bacon, oftentimes you will have beans with that. You know, in like tomato sauce heated up, and you'll have beans as well as the egg and the toast and the bacon. Probably more so in Britain than Australia, to be honest, because beans here tend to be sort of more looked down upon for some reason. I don't know why, but it's sort of seen as a sort of cheap alternative, if that makes sense. So, you know, we don't do a lot with beans.
Well, it struck me as really funny because... And not that, you know, corn has no nutritional value whatsoever, and, you know, baked beans are good, but those were the only two, quote, vegetables that my father would eat. He didn't eat anything green. And I could imagine my poor mom, if my dad saw any of the recipes that had breakfast stuff, because breakfast, he would eat. I love breakfast. I could eat that for any meal of the day. It doesn't matter. It doesn't have to be breakfast time. And I get that from him. But if he found out he could have beans for breakfast and then beans again at lunch and then beans at dinner, my mom would have never slept in the same room as him. You know, beans, they're good for your heart. The more you eat, you know, the rest.
Yes, absolutely. So Hannah, when did you have rice for breakfast?
I'm sorry? Say that again.
When did you have rice for breakfast?
I'm having phone problems. I can't hear you. So, yeah.
When did you have rice for breakfast?
No, up on the farm, we did make a huge vat of rice the night before.
Yes.
It was we'd have put a little sugar, some sweet cream, and a little milk on it, heat it up. It's good cereal.
Yeah, okay. So, because the classic Malaysian breakfast is...
Yeah, rice pudding, basically. Just rice pudding.
Nasi lemak. Yeah, and this was... It has rice in the center, yeah. But what it also has is it has prawns. Normally, fried prawns. It has boiled egg. It has sambal, which is sort of spicy shrimp paste. And then it has cucumber, peanuts, and fried anchovies, little fish. And so basically it's this sort of combination of chili and nuts and cucumber and prawn and boiled egg and anchovy. And the reason I say it is it's actually the favourite thing of my middle son. He loves nasi lemak. And so he'll have this Malaysian breakfast, even if it's dinner, lunchtime or whatever, because it's his favourite Malaysian thing. So there you go. And lots of rice.
And what is it? It's mostly rice?
It's rice, boiled egg, peanuts, chili paste, cucumber, and some fried small fish.
Oh.
AP, I have to say I'm absolutely fascinated by the way you say that word. Over here we say anchovies.
Oh, okay.
How did he say it?
And I said,
how did you say it? How did you say it?
Yeah, just...
Anchovies.
Oh.
Isn't that cool?
Yeah, no,
I don't know why it tickles me, but it does.
No.
There you go.
Anchovies. Yeah, they add something on aluminum now. Aluminium.
Yeah, well, you aluminium. Say aluminum and I say aluminium. I say
there
aluminium
you go,
now.
Aluminium. Yeah, that's what it is.
Aluminium. Yeah.
Yeah.
I can think of another one, too. We say advertisement and you guys say advertisement. Isn't that right?
We say advertisement. Yep, we absolutely say advertisement. Yep,
wow.
Absolutely.
That's a good one. That's
yep.
a good one. That's a good one.
So,
I know not to tell a lady, don't get your knickers in a bunch. Don't say that.
Yes. Yes. Or otherwise, you know, they get upset. But yeah, no, it is fascinating which things. Are slightly different in terms of how we say things and we don't say things, and it's almost a history thing because we do, you know, go mainly from the British, it has to be said, but we do things slightly different even from the British on occasions. So.
Those little nuances I think are awesome, and they stick with me when I hear them, like schedule versus schedule.
Yes.
So many, just a slight different enunciation of
slightly,
a syllable. Yeah.
Yeah, slightly. So, but not hugely different, just sort of slightly different. So,
yeah.
And
but I like it.
And you hear it sometimes. Yeah, no, you hear it sometimes in the sort of strangest of places. And so, anyways. But, Hatter, I might put up Mr. Green's poem, I think, because it's always a pleasure to... I'm having all sorts of trouble today, just copying and pasting and putting pictures up. But really simple... sort of things, yeah. It's just the site's doing very strange things and making my life very difficult for no good reason. So,
well, here's Gerald.
Yeah, thank you. I can't see life put any pictures up, which is really strange. Anyway, but Gerald did send us a SoundCloud as he usually does because he's incredibly organized. So let me go to the top of the page and play Gerald's SoundCloud.
Tumbleweed, written and read by Gerald Green. I envy those who seem secure, who live in one house all their life, enjoying friends from birth to death and lengthy marriage with one wife. Stability looks wonderful from where I stand on shifting sand, where great uncertainty resides, affecting all that's bleak and bland. I stumble on from butte to butte, each chasm growing deeper still, while winds bear down to sway each one who struggles up the steepest hill. Like tumbleweed, I'm tossed about, can't sink an anchor or a stake to guide my future or slow down, protecting what's about to break. I envied you when I blew by and hope you didn't notice me. You are the luckiest man alive, a model for humanity. And I still drift from day to day. From here to there, I move about. Without a plan or better luck, my life's a famine from this drought. End poem.
Well, we always find interesting and different perspective in Gerald's poems when he sends them in, and we think we've done it again. Deb, what did you think of Gerald's piece?
Well, I agree. I made a point of telling him that he always brings the unexpected. I think out of all the stuff he's brought, only one time was it, and I don't want to say expected, because it's never totally expected, but it was, you know, more along the lines of what, you know, could have been versus something totally, totally unexpected. That sounded so crazy, but you know what I mean. But I envied you when I blew by and hope you didn't notice me. You are the luckiest man alive, a model for humanity. And I still drift from day to day, from here to there. I move about without a plan or better luck. My life's a famine from this drought. I think it's really awesome. And I also like that he does tend to bring his wife into the poems. I know I saw her, something about her, yeah, somewhere. But, yeah, I think it's another clever piece with another excellent video. And left me wondering now if he's still down in the Gulf or where he is on the next leg of his adventure.
Yeah.
But I can't wait for him to get back so we can sort of meet him.
Well, and put him in the studio, absolutely, and do things live, as he's promised he will do when he is back. But he's obviously out and about still somewhere, Deb. So,
yeah.
Hatter, what did you think of Gerald's piece?
Well, it's what I wrote for comment was the ending. It took whatever I was holding on to up to the point, and it just took it, and the sadness, which is a great way of doing that.
Quite poignant, wasn't it, the way that it was done?
Yeah.
So, no, I enjoyed it.
Yeah,
I enjoyed it.
Drained it.
I really don't think he has any idea just how clever we all think he is.
Probably not, but that's we can inform him of that
Sometimes it all flows down right, and everybody gets it right, but not that consistently, I don't think.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I agree with you about consistency, Hatter. I mean, I think the wonderful thing about Gerald is that he finds the space in the prompts always to come up with something interesting and new and different, and always lovely cadence and in the pieces, but. He really thinks about it, takes it on board, and comes up with something different each time. And it's a pleasure to have his work there.
You know, we need to do. I think we need to read a little bit of Plato or the Iliad.
Really?
We were gonna put our classics against theirs. Remember?
We should do that then. And do that next week, Adam. We can.
I think
we
it'd
can
be
do
inspiring.
A little
inspiring. Yeah, I think it'd be inspiring to just hear some of that.
Oh, you know,
supposed to be the best poem ever written, or the first poem, or
yes.
something.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, I think that there's a movement that says that the great poetry that's been written in this age is actually from Greece, and that we've been trying to capture their same spirit and elegance of their writing ever since.
Yeah, like Dante's Inferno, or is that one?
Yeah, I mean, Aeschylus, who wrote some brilliant poems that were actually Bobby Kennedy's favourites, by the way. Bobby Kennedy quoted Aeschylus regularly.
Yeah.
And in fact, on Bobby Kennedy's memorial in the main cemetery at Arlington, his memorial has a verse from Aeschylus on it.
Wow.
Yeah. So.
Yeah.
And so, you know, we could maybe look at Aeschylus. Atta is our first Greek poem.
I'll leave it up to you if you want.
Yeah, no. Well, if it's up to me, I'll go. Aeschylus every time from the poem Agamemnon. Be my little side project, Hatter. It'll be the Greek poem of the week, which will be by Aeschylus.
How do you spell that?
Aeschylus. Aeschylus.
Okay.
Bobby Kennedy used to say it a lot differently. What did he used to say? Aeschylus or something like that. As he used to say. It used to be an O in it, I think, from memory. Anyway, that's my side project for next week. Aeschylus. And the poem Agamemnon.
Sounds good.
Deb, we have a whole 2 poems left. Now, we do need to think about what we're going to do next week, Hatter. So I don't know if you have been thinking about this and you have a theme ready to go. Sometimes you do in terms of what we might be doing next week. Yes.
Let's do, let's see. Give me 1 minute.
Okay. We can certainly give you 1 minute. Now, Deb, did you want to do your poem next?
Either way works with me.
No. Well, let's do yours next because we've had a couple of mine in a row. So let's do yours next.
Okie doke. I'm on my way there. And there it is. Okay. All right. This is called Traveling Planters Once Beautiful Are Murderers and Fire Starters. And that photo is them before they dry up and blow away. Aren't they pretty?
Oh, got it. Okay. Yep.
Okay, here we go. Wind blows around once pink plants on the ground, and the dead rolling mass spreads seeds in dry grass, from somersaulting onto land bogs and fields of sand, like the farmers with sass out gardening as they pass. Killing just like a pistol, but it's just dried out thistle. Shrubs bounce as they roll, and planting's the goal, but in the tumbleweed pileup, deadly fires can erupt, or erode soil as they roll, and the journey takes a toll. Blood drips from pricks on the edges of sticks as animals feed on the poison from the pigweeds. The mule deer and prairie dogs may drop like logs, but weeds travel speeding as sun sprouts the seeds. And poem.
There you go. Now tell me where that picture is from. Which part of the world, Deb? I'm
Russia?
Interested. It's Russia, really?
Yeah.
Wow.
And apparently that's, from what I read, they originated there. And once they dry out and blow around, each little ball contains thousands of seeds. And
wow.
Now they are in many, many places. And I think there was something about an amazing journey from California to Arizona where they
yes.
planted like wildfire and practically took over a town. I was reading all kinds of fascinating stuff about these buggers. I had no idea.
Oh, wow. Well, no. I really enjoyed it, Deb. I had no idea that you know, you could have sort of colored flower dried tumbleweeds and that was a thing. And that's why I had to
I didn't either. I learned to put
from.
It. And as far as the birds and the mule deer and the prairie dogs can eat it and
yes.
be okay, but if
wow.
they eat too much, the poison kills
yep.
them. So it's just
wow.
like, who knew tumbleweeds were so fascinating? I just thought they were a nuisance that blew around. I never
yeah,
imagined
no,
that they started out such a pretty little ball of pink.
Very funky.
I had a pet tumbleweed.
Really?
That's how we rolled. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
we always
had to take care of this.
You
always, in the garage, in the attic space, we always had to keep these freaking tumbleweeds for next Christmas. And we couldn't,
yeah, right.
You know, I'd be careful with it all
year
round.
Of course, you were saying. Yes.
I'm talking about the tumbleweeds.
Well, there you go. Snowman tumbleweeds. So, now, Hatter,
yes.
We gave you a few minutes about the theme for next week. You're supposed to be thinking
yeah.
about the theme for next week. So while you are doing that, I'm going to read.
Yeah.
Hold up. Did you come up with one? What did I hear then?
I was saying we'll go with rain. Purple rain, blue rain, no rain, cats and dogs.
Rain.
Yeah.
We can go with rain. Rain, as in R-A-I-N, rain. We can go with rain.
Rain.
No,
hey, are you saying Achilles? Achilles?
go
is
again,
that, right?
Am I?
Are you saying
what am
Achilles?
I saying?
Achilles. Achilles,
I'm saying
Achilles.
I'm saying
like
Achilles for that poet.
Are.
And
okay.
for my tendon, I'm saying Achilles.
Well,
quite
two different
solid
things.
On the K.
Gotcha.
Yes.
Two different things.
Two different things, but yep.
Yeah.
The,
okay.
The,
gotcha.
Yes. So I have a busted Achilles, and I read Achilles. So, you know.
Okay.
But I know... Achilles is sort of, as I said, was worded slightly differently from Bobby Kennedy. But I have my final tumbleweeds poem, Hatter. And this was one from this morning. And nice little rhyming confection. And so this is in ABAB, just tumbleweeds. And it goes a little bit. Stumble and bumble upon our directions until combined wills crumble and we find another still. Not rolling or seeking, just two led together, it's clear that speaking is superfluous as ever. That one connection of electricity remains and in our affections kisses fall like rains. Capture past fears upon a moment raw, where two cavaliers hold the other to more. Once adrift on airs, now to other leads, seeing past stairs like two tumbleweeds. End poem.
Petito Ruiz. I love that you got into your AP cadence, your meter.
Isn't it?
It's like a standard.
Yep. Stock roll down the page. It's very nice.
Yeah.
Well, I'm very happy with it. Yeah.
Oh, thank you, Dan.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, you're welcome. I was going to say that the link for the poets on the board, and so is what I had saw about Russia. But AP, there was a sadness in your tone when you were reading this time. Capture past fears upon a moment raw where two cavaliers hold the other to more. I'm trying to put my finger on it. Once adrift on airs, now the other leads, seeing past stairs by two tumbleweeds. I know where this goes.
Well,
seems to be on your mind quite heavily.
No, well, you might recall that we had the Two Foxes poem last week, and this comes out of the same place, Deb. Seeing a person for the last time, and then sort of wandering along.
That's what I was just going to say. You had the same tone and feel in your voice through this poem as you did for the opening stanza of that poem.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly right. Yep. Out of exactly the same place. There you go. So. And I did write it this morning. So, there you go.
Yep, I'm feeling it.
Which poem of Achilles are you going to?
I am going for Agamemnon. Hatter, that's where I'm going for the Aeschylus poem. But you could do your own. You don't have to do. You could do one as well. We don't have to.
Okay.
We can.
I was just going to read it.
You could.
I was just going to get familiar.
You could do another. But that's where I'm going, because that was Bobby Kennedy's favourite poem, and I sort of thought, well, always had a bit of a thing for what a wonderful public speaker he was, and so I thought I might go there. That was the sole rationale.
Well, all poetry has 13 of his poems on here, but that the one that you mentioned is not one of them. Spell that for
me. I'll have to check this, but I think it goes Agmnom. I think.
Interesting indeed.
And so, yes. And so,
yeah, you wonder if him and Archimedes knew each other, you know?
I'm sure you're probably right. It was a small clique of people who were very powerful and people who were very clever. Yes.
Yeah, at least they would know of each other, sure.
So, but certainly, you know, as I said, that some of the poetry of the Greeks was really quite remarkable, and has stood the test of time in a major way.
I think you can learn from it. So, I think you can learn to control some metaphor urges that we all seem to have, and can go over the top. A little old school metaphor style can really spice up a piece.
I agree. I think it's really interesting. I have got the spelling now right, Deb. It is
Agamemnon.
Yeah.
And in Greek mythology, it's the first play. Interesting. Translated from Greek.
Yep.
Interesting.
Yep.
He's the father of tragedy.
So, yep. So that's where we'll be. We will be, and this, of course, is written in the 5th century BC. So this is incredibly old piece. So I think it'll be very interesting, Hadam. It'll be very interesting just
to
see.
We're going to run into this thing that's like I've got in my head now, is the translation between Greek, or are they speaking Greek,
yes,
or Latin, or some dialect? So the translation. Yeah. So how much is the translation involved in what's we've considered the Masters? Or how much has it been changed, maybe?
Yes. Yes. True. True. Because it is written. It was originally written in the ancient Greek. And, you know, it would have had to have been translated into English. And, of course, the whoever's doing that will have an interpretation on what they're doing. I've always enjoyed the classical Greek poets. Yeah, it's always...
Yeah.
Something that you know, I've always reflected back on, and just the quality of what it is that they did in so many years ago.
Exactly.
So
now, if we're doing rain next week, where does this poet come in? Are we doing both? I'm confused.
Oh, we're just doing it as a special. No, it's just a special step. So it's just it's like an additional sort of little bit that we're going to put in because it's interesting. Yeah.
I was going to say, because that's an interesting concept to pull out some classic poet and bring
I think it's got legs that we look at a different poet and poem from an ancient era had her each time. I think, you know, it could be really fascinating.
Yeah, that's what I was getting to.
Well,
it would be cool
to
have.
I decided we were going to write our own Iliad type.
Really?
Who's better? Modern day poets or Plato? Who?
Yeah. It's got great potential, I think, Hannah. Great potential.
You know, we hear these guys were so good, you know, Bill Shakespeare, but were they really? You know, try to ask yourself.
I think, you know, that, you know, there were some classically brilliant in the Middle Ages and you know, Shakespeare, of course, being one of them, and the wonderful sonnets and stuff that they did. But I think we probably hear more of Shakespeare these days than we hear of the Greek poets that were there before then. And you know, I think that there's lots to be learnt from those poets.
Definitely. You know, we don't see too much difference between the classics as far as music too. Beethoven, Bach, Mozart, you know, Tchaikovsky. But back in the day, Mozart and Beethoven were considered radical music,
yes,
compared to the ones before. And so to us it all seems to be the same. But back then it was huge difference. And they were the Beatles and the Rolling Stones of their time.
But yes, they were. Mm-hmm. And, they were. And they, as I said, you know, they did some brilliant writings and some seminal writings. And I think it's great to be able to go back and reflect on those.
We should study that one night and then decide... What was the flavor? What was the hook? What was the draw? Was it the words, the pattern, the romance? and the tragedy.
Well, let's see what we get out of having a look at a couple of these classical sort of poems from the Greek, and see and reflect on what they did, Hatter. You know, I think it will be fascinating to see. We've probably, I think, got to the end of Tumbleweeds, I think. Hatter, did you want to do some thank yous around the shop?
I'd like to thank everybody for participating, everybody that's going to tune in on by demand and listen. ATOV, Team of Voices Radio. Free to join. Have fun. Thanks, Deborah, AP, and everybody else that wrote. I always miss one.
Tomorrow night's Motown with Hatter and his jukebox.
Excellent.
11 p.m.
I was going to ask
about
that. Yes. Yes.
Temptations or Four Tops? Are you a Temptations or Four Tops?
Ah, funky.
That's a classic argument.
Well, great singers, all of them. So, you know, it's hard to go wrong if you're looking at Motown.
Well,
Hatter,
absolutely wonderful.
And then
Monday at 10 p.m. is Lions and Bears. Oh my! So
that's cute.
Whichever one you pick in May, there'll be another choice for you in June, and then one again in July.
They'll
and by the time
heard.
They're done, you will have
that's
done
fun.
A lion and a tiger and a bear. So.
That is
choose
fun.
Your photo and your word bank
yes.
and have fun with it. Two nights. Great show, guys.
Excellent. Thank you, Deb. And thank you to Stephen and Steve for calling in early. And thank you to Gerald for his wonderful work always on SoundCloud. And thank you to Hatter and to yourself for being along for the ride. It's always good fun.
Pleasure. Always fun, AP.
That might have been my favorite collab because of the fact that it was powerful and true, and you guys amazed
me.
To tell you the truth,
I was blown away. I was speechless, I have to say.
Right?
We must have been
really
at the same time.
My favorite
one.
Yep.
Time.
It was really
and
nice.
And you both wrote it at the
yep.
last oh. minute. So, like,
yep.
that's how in tune you are.
So I reckon we probably wrote it in terms of our contributions. We probably wrote about the same time. So,
So enjoy the rest of your Sunday, AP. We'll talk soon, guys.
I've got the kids out tonight, so Japanese food booked. So, my daughter will once again go through this huge bowl of raw fish at the spate of blight, because that's what she does. So looking forward to it. So I'm going to go out with Chrissy Hynde, The Pretenders, and Brass and Pocket, Hatter. So
there you go.
Great show, and thanks a lot for all your help. And we'll be back next week with Rain and a little bit of Greek poetry for the fun of it. So,
there you go.
We will talk soon. Okay, bye, everybody.
Yep.
Got that in pocket. Got that all. I'm gonna use it. Intention.
thank you, everybody. It's been a pleasure to be with Tumbleweeds. We're back next week with rain and a little bit of Greek poetry along the way. We'll see you then. Bye, everybody.